Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So thank you for coming today. Today we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the third canto, chapter 19. And this is the killing of the demon Hiranyaksha. So we're on text number one. This is the last chapter of the pastime of Lord Abhor, Lord Rahadev, and this is the chapter where Hiranyaksha is killed. So the Lord is responding to the prayers of the demigods and Lord Brahma. And these prayers are not to be compared to the prayers of the demons. The devotee's purpose is to please the Supreme Lord. And therefore, we'll see here, the Lord smiled and accepted the prayer to kill the demon. Maitreya Vacha Avadarya Virinchasya Nirvyalikamritam Vachaha Prahasya Prema Garbena Tadupangena Sograhit Maitreya Vacha Avadarya Vinirchasya Nirvyali Kamritambachaha Prahasya Prema Garbena Tadupangena Sograhit Maitreya Vacha Avadarya Virinchasya Nirvyali Kamritam Bachaha Prahasya Prema Garbena Tadupangena Sograhit Please chant. Maitreya Vacha Avadarya Virinchasya Avadarya Vinirchasya Nirvalika Vamakinchaha Andasnagena Vardena Tadapangena Sograhit Maitreya Vacha Avadarya Virinchasya Nirvyali Kamritam Vacha Prahasya Prema Garbena Tadapangena Sograhit Maitreya Vacha Avadarya Virinchasya Nirvyali Kamritam Vacha Prahasya Prema Garbena Tadapangena Sograhit Vaishnavis Maitreya Vacha Namataha Masya Prema Garbena Tadapangena Sograhit Maitreya Vacha Mandarya Vinishchasya Nirvindarama Vichmacha Vahasya Prema Garbena. Matriya Vacha. Asha Prema Garbena. Maitreya Vacha. Maitreya said, Avadarya. After hearing, Virinchasya of Lord Brahma. Nirvyalika, free from all sinful purposes. Amritam, nectarian. Vacha, words. Prahasya, heartily laughing. Premagarbena, laden with love. Tat, those words. Apangena, with a glance. Saha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Agrahit, accepted. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Sri Maitreya said, after hearing the words of Brahma, the Creator, which are free from all sinful purposes and as sweet as nectar, the Lord heartily laughed and accepted his prayer with a glance laden with love. Please repeat. Sri Maitreya said, after hearing the words of Brahma, the Creator, which are free from all sinful purposes, and as sweet as nectar, the Lord heartily laughed and accepted his prayer with a glance laden with love. Purport. The word Nirvyalika is very significant. The prayers of the demigods or devotees of the Lord are free from all sinful purposes, but the prayers of demons are always filled with sinful purposes. The demon Hiranyaksha became powerful by deriving a boon from Brahma. And after attaining that boon, he created a disturbance because of his sinful intentions. The prayers of Brahma and other demigods are not to be compared to the prayers of the demons. Their purpose is to please the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the Lord smiled and accepted the prayer to kill the demon. Demons, who are never interested in praising the Supreme Personality of Godhead because they have no information of him, go to the demigods. And in Bhagavad Gita, this is condemned. Persons who go to the demigods and pray for advancement in sinful activities are considered to be bereft of all intelligence. Demons have lost all intelligence because they do not know what is actually their self-interest. Even if they have information of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they decline to approach him. It is not possible for them to get their desired boons from the Supreme Lord because their purposes are always sinful. It is said that the dacoits in Bengal used to worship the goddess Kali for fulfillment of their sinful desires to plunder others' property. But they never went to a Vishnu temple because they might have been unsuccessful in praying to Vishnu. Therefore, the prayers of the demigods or the devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are always untinged by sinful purposes. Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda. Om Gyana Tumarandasya Gananjana Sakaya Chakshusamayitamena Tasmai Shri Gurvenima Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitamena Bhutale Sraim Upakadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Panchakopa Chubhischa Kripasindhu Bhavcha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Sri Maitreya said, after hearing the words of Brahma, the Creator, which are free from all sinful purposes and as sweet as nectar, the Lord heartily laughed and accepted his prayer with a glance laden with love. So this is beautiful. Shows the relationship between the devotees and the Supreme Lord. It's very loving. So in the purport there, Srila Prabhupada says the word Nirvyalika is very significant because it refers to the prayers of the devotees who are free from sinful purposes. And I was just looking up that word and I noticed that this is the only place it shows up, except there's a devotee named Nirvyalika Das. And I was thinking, that's nice. Actually, this should be the devotees, all the devotees' names, right? We should be Nirvyalika Das. We should be free from all sinful purposes. When we approach Krishna, we go to the temple. So that was nice. And then also Prabhupada mentioned self-interest. We'll talk a little bit about that here. But first, let's just show where we are here, give you an idea. We're actually here in this pastime of Lord Vraha, which are three chapters here, 17 to 19. So we're on the last chapter. And that's the killing of the demon here on Yaksha. And so we're starting in the beginning here, the first chapter, or the first verse to the 29th, or the 26th actually verse, is the fight between Hiranyaksha and Vrahadev. So we'll see there, it's very interesting. It's a very, very, fascinating and overwhelming, and it's very exciting. So in verses 2 to 6, Hiranyaksha overthrows the Lord's mace. And then after that, the Lord overthrew Hiranyaksha's mace. And then Hiranyaksha failed in various attacks. And then he created illusions. And then this is where he dies in this particular section, in 23 and 26. This is where he's killed. So then if we go on to the next few verses there, this is where Brahma and others, they praise Hiranyaksha. And this is the devatas, they're addressing the Lord. And Maitreya speaks again there. And then in verses 33 to 36, these are the glorious activities of the Lord. And Suta Goswami is speaking to Shanaka Rishi here. And this is where Vidura felt transcendental bliss just by hearing about the Lord and his devotees. And it talks about Gajendra, how he was delivered. And it has a question about what grateful person would not worship the Lord. So we have to be very grateful. So it ends here with this, what the Pala Shruti, which means just by listening to this pastime, if you chant it, if you take pleasure in narrating it, you'll be relieved from all sinful results, even the sin of killing a brahmana. And then it confers that there's extraordinary merit that you get by hearing this narration. You get mahapunyam. You get wealth. That's extraordinary merit, mahapunyam. And then you get wealth, which is danyam, position, padam, fame, yashasyam, long life, ayur, and you get prowess of the senses and life air during battle. And if you listen to this at the last moment of your life, then you'll go back to the abode of Krishna. So those are the messages of this chapter. So we see that Hiranyaksha is creating a disturbance due to the boon that he obtained from Brahma. And to protect the world, this is when Vraha appeared and he fought with him. And even though he was so powerful, this demon, Hiranyaksha, The Lord just played with him like a plaything. You see, he could have easily killed him, but he just wanted to have a chance to have a good fight. So it mentions here in this chapter also about devotees like Prahlad Maharaj. They find great joy in killing of envious demons. Just as saintly people approve of removing dangerous snakes and scorpions. So this narration and the Lord's pastimes are authoritative. They're purifying. And if you receive them through the proper disciplic succession, you know, real light souls, then it'll destroy our sinful reactions. So even if ordinary living entities, they can approach the Lord in devotional service and is kind and is pleased by that unalloyed devotion. So this is the attachment we have to get for hearing the Lord's pastimes. And if we do, what's the result? You get spiritual wealth, you get auspiciousness, it strengthens one's existence, and it leads to the supreme abode. So this chapter is going to teach us how to seek, or that we should seek, the shelter of the Lord and appreciate the protection he offers to the devotees. So we take advantage of hearing the glories, which uplifts us and nurtures us, and then it'll bring us closer to Krishna. So here, who's the real guardian of the galaxy? What to speak of the guardian of different countries? Well, they can't even imagine guarding the galaxy. Oh, you can't imagine in a cartoon or in some kind of movie. But it's just all imagined. You know, or even a demigod, they can't even imagine that. But who's our real hero? The Supreme Lord. He's the guardian of the worlds. He's the guardian of the galaxy. So this is the Lord's position. He's all-powerful. He's protector of the universe. And not only that, he upholds Dharma. He upholds the religious principles. So this is our hero. This is our Lord. Even though, you know, they come up with so many characters, Krishna could come up with his own characters in different forms. You know, he come as a Lord Boar. He could come as a fish, come as a lion, so many things. So here, the battle between the Lord Boar and the demon Hiraksha, this is what it's like for Krishna. In the last chapter, there's a verse where the purport to the Prabhupada mentions that no one is unhappy when a serpent is killed. And it's the practice among village boys to catch a serpent by the tail and play with it for some time and then kill it. So similarly, the Lord could have killed the demon at once, but he played with him in the same way. You know, just as a child plays with a snake before killing it. So you can see here, the snake has a few teeth left. I guess he's been banging him somehow or another, playing with it. So just see how easy it is and how excited the child is and how fun it is for the Lord. So this is brought up again in this chapter. And in the purport to the 16th verse, Srila Prabhupada says, the Lord enjoyed the striking on his transcendental body just like a fully grown up father fighting with his child. Sometimes a father takes pleasure in having a mock fight with his small child. And similarly, the Lord felt Hiranyaksha striking on his body to be like flowers offered for worship. In other words, the Lord desired to fight in order to enjoy his transcendental bliss. Therefore, he enjoyed the attack. They don't show this in these so-called superheroes. He's actually enjoying it. It doesn't even faze them. So in text 32, it's mentioned there in the verse and the purport. It says part of the verse, killing in a great fight a demon of unprecedented prowess, as if he were just a plaything. And in the purport there, Srila Prabhupada mentions, it is also stated here that although the demon Hiranyaksha was unlimited in prowess, he was just like a doll for the Lord. A child breaks so many dolls without real endeavor. Similarly, although a demon may be very powerful and extraordinary in the eyes of ordinary man in the material world, to the Lord, killing such a demon is no difficulty. He can kill millions of demons as simply as a child plays with dolls and breaks them. So this is so nice. So then I like to read one thing that Srila Sanatana Goswami has warned. He said here that one should not hear anything about the personality of the Lord from the lips of a non-devotee. Non-devotees are considered to be like serpents. As milk is poisoned by a serpent's touch, so also the narration of the pastimes of the Lord is as pure as milk. When administered by serpent-like non-devotees, it becomes poisonous. Not only does it have no effect in transcendental pleasure, but it is dangerous also. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has warned that no description of the pastimes of the Lord should be heard from the Mayavad or impersonalist school. He has clearly said, Mayavadi Vyasya Sunile Haya Sarva Nasha. If anyone hears the Mayavadi's interpretation of the pastimes of the Lord, or their interpretation of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, or any other Vedic literature, then he's doomed. Once one associates with impersonalists, he can never understand the personal feature of the Lord and his transcendental pastimes. So we're just seeing this verse has given us the personal feature of the Lord, his glancing at his devotee with love and his accepting his beautiful prayers. And this is where we see another point here. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the seventh canto, there's a chapter 19. And there's some beautiful prayers given by Prahlad Maharaj. And basically, I think I have the verse here. Not on this particular one, on the next one, actually. But the main points in this particular chapter is that, according to the scriptures, killing an envious person is justified as it stops their sinful reactions from accumulating further. And their karma ends and they get relief. So saintly persons are generally not violent against killing. They're nonviolent and they're against killing. But they make an exception for envious, dangerous living beings like snakes and scorpions. So similarly, the killing of envious demon Hiranyakashipu, who was ruthlessly persecuting his young devotee son, Prahlad, brought pleasure to saintly persons. So just see. So Hiranyakashipu was exceptionally envious. You could just see there he's torturing his innocent devoted son. Why? Just because he was chanting Krishna's names. So this shows how dangerous envious people can be. They're considered more dangerous than snakes, because snakes can be subdued by mantras and herbs. But envious people, they persist in harming others despite their attempts to pacify them. So we see so many historical examples of envious people violently persecuting saintly devotees. We see Prahlad Maharaj, we see Jesus Christ, simply out of sheer enviousness. So Prahlad Maharaj was actually glad his envious father Hiranyakashipu was killed. And it relieved him and ended the demon's sinful reactions. So killing the envious brings saintly pleasure in certain circumstances. So we're learning how the main justification that killing for exceptionally envious people, it can be pleasing to saintly people because it stops their evil behaviors and it limits their sins. But generally, violence is shunned. So here we see, he was so angry that no one could pacify him. So they sent Prahlad Maharaj to pacify the Lord with prayers. So after killing the demon Hiranyakashipu, Lord Nrisimhadeva appeared very fierce. And Prahlad Maharaj, you know, he was telling him, there's no need for your anger anymore. And there's that nice verse he quotes there. Saintly people take pleasure even in killing envious living beings like snakes and scorpions. So everyone is happy. Hiranyakashipu has been killed since he was worse. So for devotees, Lord Nrisimhadeva's fierce form is not disturbing. Just as a lion cub is not frightened to its mother. So devotees, they worship the Lord in any form. And here Prahlad Maharaj is saying, I'm not afraid of the Lord's fierce features because he knows the Lord is kind to the fallen souls. So Prahlad prays to always be allowed to serve the Lord's lotus feet, which are the ultimate shelter. And he knows that this material world is miserable, but whether one is in heaven or hell, pure devotional service to Krishna is the only real remedy. And by serving the Lord in devotional association, one can become free from the contamination and ignorance. And this is easily followed by devotees. It's given their instructions, given by authorities. So Prahlad Maharaj mentions in that chapter that there's no material arrangement that can make one happy. But one has to take full shelter of the Lord's mercy and become peaceful and liberated. So the points that he's emphasizing there is basically the Lord appears to protect his devotees, and the devotees see him worshipful in any form, and devotional service is the only solution to the material miseries, and how one must fully surrender to the Lord. So here's that nice prayer, Lord, what he says, "My Lord Nrisimhadev, please therefore cease your anger now that my father, the great demon, Hiranyakashipu, has been killed. Since even saintly persons take pleasure in killing of a scorpion or a snake, all the worlds have achieved great satisfaction because of the death of this demon. Now they are confident of their happiness, and they will always remember your auspicious incarnation in order to be free from fear." So that's the 7.9.14. So in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a nice verse. It's described there. Namam duskritino mudha prapajante naradama maya prita jnana asuram bhavam ashritam. So this is the verse. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, they do not surrender unto me. So this is in the Bhagavad Gita, described there in 7.15. But in the next verse, it describes, Chaturvidha bhajante mam, jnana sukritino arjuna, arto jigna shir artarti, jnani cha bhartarshava. O best among the bhartas, four kinds of pious men began to render devotional service unto me, the distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and who are searching for knowledge of the absolute. So we see here, there's devotees, even amongst the pious ones, we see still there's some self-interest. So, you know, this is the four at least, but it says that of the four of these, the one who's searching for knowledge is the best. So this is what's describing here, that the foolish, these mudhas, they're working hard like beasts, you know, for the burden of fruitive results. They think that's their self-interest. So those are the foolish. And then the lowest of mankind, the Naradamas, they're uncivilized without spiritual knowledge. And then there's a misguided intelligentsia. You see, the Maya Prita Jnana is there. They're learned scholars, but they're misled by illusion. And then we have the outright demons, the atheists, the Asuram Bhavams. They're envious atheists, and they're inimical to God. But you see, the pious, there's a distress. They want something. You know, they approach the Lord for something material. There's inquisitive, the jignashu. They're curious about God, so they inquire. And they render service. And then there's the seekers of material gain, the artarthis. They seek devotional service for profit. And then there's the jnanis. They seek knowledge. And they're searching for the knowledge of the absolute truth. So of these, in the next verse, the 17th verse, this one is the 16th verse, it says of these, the one who is in full knowledge and who is always engaged in devotional service is the best. For I am very dear to him, and he is very dear to me. So this is it. So the domination is surrender. This is the main thing. This is the mood. Whereas the impious, they're attached to sense gratification. And they're envious. So here we see here in that same chapter, if we go to the 20th verse, describes there, Kamais taisha tarhita jnana prapajante nya devataha tam tam niyamam astaya prakritya niyata svaya. Those whose intelligence has been stolen by material desires surrender unto the demigods and follow those particular rules and regulations of worship according to their own natures. And then Prabhupada, in that purport, he gives a very nice reference to a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham padam. So a person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of all material desire, without any material desire, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the personality of Godhead. So these are this is the reference there. That's 2.3.10. So whether we're free of desires, we have full desires, or we're desiring liberation, we should worship Krishna. But less intelligent people, they worship demigods for temporary material gain. And so, but the devotees, they're just dependent on Krishna. They're not misguided. So we know Krishna is our absolute master, and, you know, all others are his servants. So a pure devotee never approaches the demigods for material needs. He engages in bhakti yoga. He stresses bhakti yoga because it's a means to self-realization. It's beyond just karma, you know, jnana. It's actually the ultimate perfection of life. And being desirous less means feeling happiness in the Lord's pleasure, not being inert. You see, this is the spirit of selfless devotion. So those who have broader intelligence, they can directly worship Krishna. And he's the ultimate authority, even for our material needs. But we want to strive for that unmixed devotional service to Krishna. And it can be practiced by anybody. And regardless of your inner motives, you should still practice, because it'll be universally beneficial. So basically, these verses are emphasizing that pure devotional service to Krishna is the perfection of all paths. And since it focuses simply on pleasing Krishna. And it's interesting, Prabhupada mentions there some points in that particular Srimad Bhagavatam verse. He makes a thing about intuition. And this is interesting what he said about that. He said the natural function of the living being as a part and parcel of the Supreme is to serve the Supreme Whole. And in the conditioned state, this intuition manifests as altruism, philanthropy, socialism, etc., based on the feelings of doing good for others. This is a partial manifestation of the original desire to experience happiness through the Lord's happiness. So the gopis exhibited this fully by loving Krishna selflessly. And all they wanted was Krishna's happiness. And that's the akama spirit. And we see originally Arjuna, he declined to fight out of his own self-interest. But later he fought to satisfy Krishna. And that was the akama spirit. So these thoughts of merging into Brahman can be selfish if aimed at impersonal liberation. But serving Krishna is the pure state. So even if we have material desires, if we worship Krishna directly, recognizing him as the ultimate authority, then that's higher intuition. So that's nice. So this innate intuition of the living being is to serve Krishna, is to love Krishna. But in the conditioned state, it manifests as altruism, philanthropy. But pure love of Krishna is the ultimate intuition. And we awaken that through devotion. So also mentions there that the aim of yoga. And in this chapter too, it describes that. But what is the purpose of yoga? Actually, the ultimate aim of yogis who perform meditation is to become free from their material bodies. And it seems like yoga, they just want to make their body look the best, right? in shape, you know, get a six-pack or whatever. But actually, yoga is meant for liberation. So a true yoga involves meditation on the form of the Supreme Lord, Bhagavan, Sri Krishna. So fixing one's mind on the Lord in one, it's actually one of his manifold forms. It's real yoga. So the perfection of yoga practice, it can be attained if we constantly think of the Lord's form at the time of death. And this will allow one to leave the material body and be transferred to the spiritual kingdom. So therefore, the real purpose of yoga is not to keep the body fit or young, as commonly advertised. Rather, it is to utilize the body and mind to meditate on the Lord to achieve the highest aim of being liberated from material conditioning and return to the divine realm. And this is what you all hear. You all yogis are sitting, we're meditating on the Supreme Lord now. So by meditating on him and merging into his activities, his pastimes, we can reach his abode and we could find true, eternal, blissful life. So the real purpose of yoga is reconnecting with and attaining the Supreme Lord, not pursuing health, longevity, or other material goals which keep us bound to the temporary body. So that's our focus. But maybe as a side benefit, you will get healthy also. So you don't have to worry about that. So the verse here is a nice verse. It's described. It's here is Yesham na tushto bhagavan yagna lingo janardana tesham shramo hi apartarya yadatma nadrita swayam. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Janardana, Lord Krishna, is the form to accept all the results of sacrifice. If he's not satisfied, then one's labor for advancement is futile. He is the ultimate self, and therefore one who does not satisfy him certainly neglects his own interests. So this is interesting. We have to know our own interest, which is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the nine processes of devotional service. So that's our process. So here, that's from 313.3. So by Krishna's inconceivable potency, he can become the universal form. And this is described in this chapter. It's probably mentioned in the purport. He says, as explained in the Bhagavad Gita, and at the same time, he can remain within the box of his devotees as their worshipable deity. Guess whose box that is? Anybody know? There's a devotee. That's Mukunda Datta's box, where he carries his deities wherever he goes. So there's many devotees, and they keep a statue of the Lord in a small box, and they carry it with them everywhere. So every morning, they worship the Lord in a box. And the Supreme Lord Keshava, or the Personality of Godhead, Krishna, he is not bound by any measurement or calculation. He can remain within his devotee, with his devotee in any suitable form. Yet he's unapproachable by any amount of demoniac activities. So this is how our prayer should be, and our actual love for the Lord should be, is actually really love. So basically what we're talking about is that people generally engage in foolish sense gratificatory activities, not devotional service. And regulated devotional service, archana, is directly instructed by the Lord as the perfection of life, but people neglect it. So foolish people, they don't know their real self-interest. It lies in realizing Vishnu, the source of everything. So this is our self-interest. So those attached to the false material happiness, they can't become Krishna conscious despite instructions because they're led by the blind men into ignorance. So this is all nicely described here, but I'd like to end with this here, how this is our beginning of devotional service, actually, is to spare some time and listen to the Srimad Bhagavatam from the right source. And we're seeing here this divine play. Beyond uplifting the world, the Lord appears for divine playfulness, to enjoy transcendental pastimes. This is called Leela. As Matsya, he frolics in the waves. As Vraha, he relishes a fight. Krishna churns the devotees' hearts. And Nrisimha unleashes his holy anger. And Srimad Bhagavatam describes these playful descents. So different cantos, they detail various incarnation and climaxing in Krishna's supremely exquisite pastimes. So the material world, it reflects the spiritual upside down like a tree in the water. You see the reflection. So what exists here imperfectly, it shadows the original spiritual reality. So people fight and are attracted. These propensities originally exist purely in God, who is vastly more personal than we are. So this is the nature of the Supreme Lord and his loving glance towards his devotees. So, yes, we have a question already. Bhrigupati Prabhu. Jai. Yes. Yes.
Elsewhere it's mentioned that the demigods are superior to human beings and the demons as well. They're very powerful. They live a long time. They're more intelligent. So why are the demigods giving these benedictions to the demons in the first place? Why is Lord Brahma, you know, giving a benediction like that to Hiranyaksha? Why does Lord Shiva give a benediction like this to Ravana? Why did, I guess, Lord Shiva again give that benediction to Bhashmasura? They're more intelligent. They're more powerful. Why are they getting, you know, why are they doing it? Because it just never works. It always just, you know, turns around and causes problems for the demigods themselves sometimes. What to speak of living beings lower on the evolutionary scale there.
Did I just hear the answer to that question in a previous class?
You may have. I might have missed yeah. it. Cause I'm
oh, okay. You weren't there? Oh, okay. Someone asked that question. And they said, just like, you know, if you go to the store and you want to buy a gun or you want to buy some cigarettes or something, you know, your sacrifice, you're giving money for that. So that person, the storekeeper, is like a demigod. He's obliged to give it to you. So in the same way, the demigods are obliged. That's their purpose, is to give benedictions like that. So if they come, these demons, they like, you know, have a sinful desire. You know, I want to get this benediction, and then I'll get it from him, and then I'll turn it back on him. So they have that desire, you know. So the demons are obliged. I mean, the demigods are obliged, unfortunately. Yeah, so... Sure. You want? Thank you. That's good. That the demons get enough rope to hang themselves, yes. And if they don't, then Krishna, he comes for pastime, and he just wipes them out. So we have no fear of the demons. And we see that going on today. It's amazing. So we see the devotees are out there distributing these transcendental literatures. It's like warfare. They're like bombs, you know, to, you know, transform the impious lives of the misdirected society. And hopefully this will make an effect. So all glories to the great devotees. They're actually better than demigods, right? The devotees sometimes, I guess, will give you something material, but in general, they'll give you something. Krishna does that too, actually, but he does it in such a way that you'll never ask for that again, right? You know, please give me, please, please. And then you get it, and then, God, why did I want that? Yes.
Yes, yeah, mother. I just wanted to say I was happy that it was qualified about the killing of snakes, because yesterday it just said about that even a saintly person is happy when a snake is killed, and it's good that it said the dangerous snakes, because out of snakes only 20%, less than 20% are venomous and dangerous, And in India, the people know that. They kill the venomous snakes, and some snakes are even very good because they do things like catch rats and things like that. So they're valued. And I just wanted to kind of qualify that because it seemed like a blanket statement yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's not. Well, there's even a devotee here who is Savas's grandson, has a snake pet. You see him walking down the block with it around his neck. Everybody comes up and pets it. And nice. So, yeah, all living creatures in general, we don't have violence. But if it's envious and it's poisonous, yes. Thank you. Thank you. Any other comments, questions, realizations? Well, thank you for your amazing participation and kind patience. Thank you. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.